Hey everyone, welcome back to the Atlanta Startup Podcast. Today we're joined by CEOs from two London startups, Elizabeth Lucas, CEO of Americas at Autogen AI, and Anna Brailsford, CEO of Code First Girls. This is really a unique conversation because these two leaders have their sights set on Atlanta expansion. In the conversation today, we dive into each startup's unique founding story. We talk about their tactical approach to executing on their Atlanta expansion. We also dive into AI regulation and how they're both thinking about the impact of AI within their respective business models. We also talk about their unique fundraising stories from the last 2 years. And lastly, we round out with their ask for the Atlanta startup community. This is a really great conversation. Let's dive right in. Anna and Elizabeth, thank you for joining me today.
Thanks, William. Thanks for having us.
Great to be here.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to host you both. And I would love to just dive right in. This is a very unique episode that we'll be recording today, but I think our guests will certainly appreciate the perspectives that you both bring to the table. So, you know, Elizabeth, let's start with you and the founding story of Autogen AI. This is a really unique startup out of Europe. And we're going to talk about why we have you on the podcast today a little bit more. But let's start with the founding story and in your background, and then we'll transition over to Anna as well.
Yeah, awesome. So great to be here and great to be in Atlanta, actually, right now, doing this with you. The founding story of Autogen is actually like really unique. Our founder is a gentleman by the name of Sean Williams. He's based in London. He is sort of a serial entrepreneur. He sold his company in 2020. And then he sort of exited that organization called Corndell. And he was sort of like trying to figure out what he was going to do new and next. And he is friends with one of the research developers on the AlphaFold project at Google's DeepMind in London. And they were talking about sort of the large language models that they had been working on. And so he's like, this is impossible. You know, computers can't write. And as he started digging deeper and deeper into it, he was sort of amazed by the technology. And so instantly he was sort of reminded of one of his first careers, which was in government bid and proposal writing, which is, if anyone's been in that space, a pretty arduous task. And even on the sort of enterprise and commercial side, sort of responding to large bids and proposals and tenders can be really taxing across the organization from the CEO on downwards, because the types of evidencing that you have to bring forth to build your story can be located in different parts of the business. So he's set to kind of leverage this technology and built a team around him of proposal writers and machine learning and data scientists to really kind of build a unique application layer technology that could service this really unique sort of omnipresent need across large organizations. And so here we are today. We're about a year and change old. We've gone through our Series A, our Series B with Salesforce Ventures, and we're launching in the US. So it's been a really exciting story, and the market's been really receptive to, you know, addressing this pain point. So happy to be here. Happy to talk more about it.
Yeah, we're glad that you're here in Atlanta. And Anna, I will turn it over to you to share a little bit more about Code First Girls.
Yeah, so Code First Girls is one of the largest communities of women coders in the world. So we've taught over 150,000 women how to code for free. And essentially in around 2020, when I came on board, they were looking for a CEO and co-founder. I flipped the model. Prior to 2020, Code First Girls was focused primarily on just providing free education to women. My background previously, I was the commercial director of LinkedIn, and I very much saw a gap to be able to build a sort of rich data picture around understanding what are the barriers for women entering the technology industry, things that were stopping them from actually accelerating once they were in role. And indeed, the challenges around organizations actually retaining those women. So we ended up creating a B2B subscription model. Within the first year of launch, we pretty much 10x'd. So now we work with about 130 organizations, big global organizations in nature, the likes of sort of Goldman Sachs, Bank of America, Ford, to name but a few. And essentially, we are building their pipelines of talent for them internally and also externally as well.
I love that. And we're definitely going to talk more about how you came in and transitioned the business model to be this B2B subscription a little bit later in the podcast. But, you know, you all are both here in Georgia today and this week as a part of this program Going Global in Georgia, where London meets Atlanta. And the purpose of this is really focused on bridging the gap and bringing enhanced commerce connections between Europe and the US, London and Atlanta. And both of you all as leaders at your respective startups, right? The next natural progression for a startup is this geographical eastward and westward expansion, right? You've scaled and started in London, and now you have your sights set on Atlanta. Elizabeth, I'll start with you. I would love to unpack what attracts you and your team and your business model to Atlanta specifically.
Yeah, I think Atlanta is a really interesting city. It's obviously got an amazing international hub. I'm a huge Delta flyer, so peace out to that. But I think in terms of the community and the connections that could be made in Atlanta, I'm seeing that that's a really sort of vibrant space, not to mention the organizations that are down here. So you've got, you know, Home Depot, NTT, NCR, Coca-Cola, to name a few. And so it's really exciting to see sort of the organizations that we potentially serve or are serving sort of with boots on the ground here, but also the talent that's attracted to this market as a result of having these organizations here. So I think for us, you know, being a London-based company, being on the Eastern Seaboard is really helpful in terms of collaboration and time zone management. And then it's, you know, navigating what would be, you know, the best city to look at in terms of forming some roots in the U.S.
Yeah. And Anna, I'll ask the same question for you. And I know you all have a true defined customer and a deliverable that you have for this customer, which is unique, diverse tech talent. What did you see in Atlanta to want to come here, put boots on the ground and really formalize relationships and operations here?
Well, Atlanta, I think, has a great reputation for doing business. I think it's ranked as one of the top places in the US to actually be able to do business. And I think that's really important as well when you consider, let's face it, outsiders. I'm a Brit, right? I'm a Brit coming in. And it's really important that we make relationships and, you know, we are greeted, I think, with that level of Southern hospitality to be actually able to talk about what we do and understand the value of it. So first things first, I think it's a great place to do business. Secondly, I think it's a growing economy. I think lots of companies are hiring here. I think that's a combination of, you know, fantastic cost of living coupled with the fact that I think there's an incredibly educated population. So where we see those things coalescing and companies building talent pipelines, they're going to require diverse talent pipelines to be able to do that. So you know, for Code First Girls, it's really important that we're in situ to be part of that growth process.
Yeah. And Anna, you really hit on a really interesting point there, right? Is that this economic growth is really the driver of all other things here, including cost of living, which some may argue, which is getting higher and a little bit more unaffordable, but it's still relatively affordable when you think about New York, LA, SF, Chicago, and et cetera. But, you know, I think Atlanta, thanks to many factors like tech forward leadership, we've seen this increase in economic growth, population increase. I was reading a stat earlier last week that Atlanta job growth is outpacing the national average. You talked about cost of living. And then I also think about the startup capital ecosystem that's here, right? It's truly starting to round out. You've got more and more early stage capital funds like Valor. And then you've got some later stage growth stage firms, notable private equity firms. And then you all both hit on some of the Fortune 500s and Fortune 1000s here, like Home Depot, Assurant, UPS, that are also building out venture arms, strategically investing in early stage innovation. So, you know, those are all factors. And really based off of that, I'm curious to hear how you all, you know, think about the momentum that Atlanta can bring to Code First Girls and AutoGen AI, respectively. So thinking maybe 3 to 5 years from now, following this expansion into Atlanta, you know, where do you envision your company will be at? And I'll start with Elizabeth to tackle that one.
Yeah, so we've got, you know, really ambitious growth objectives. You know, we believe that this is a need that a lot of organizations have, whether you're a large enterprise, all the way down to sort of the university space that's applying for grants. So we want to be in an ecosystem, A, that supports that growth, that can help this company sort of thrive in terms of talent pipeline, in terms of relationships, in terms of accessibility. So I think for us, you know, Atlanta is really interesting, and it's something that we are, you know, excited to be a part of the discussion to understand how, you know, how our future could unfold here. But for us, you know, I think it's about sort of like how quickly we can, you know, accelerate, get these technologies are being adopted so quickly and at such pace that, you know, we just need to be in a center that can really support that growth.
Yeah. And Anna, I'll pose the same question to you. And I think it's also unique that Atlanta just has such a unique pool of educational, secondary educational institutions like a Spelman College, like an Agnes Scott College as well, which are two women-only schools that produce incredible talent year after year. And then you pair that with the Fortune 500s, 1000s, startups here as well. Curious to hear your thoughts on what Code First Girls can look like 3 to 5 years from now after being in Atlanta.
Well, our big mission is to provide over a million learning opportunities for women to learn how to code for free. And we anticipate that will add in excess of $1 billion worth in economic opportunity in women joining the global tech economy. So we have big goals and community. And when I say community, I mean the local community in Atlanta is very much part of that. So we are a community-based organization. We work really closely to understand like women's needs, how to build pipelines, what the academic ecosystem looks like. And right now, we very much have, you know, a waiting list of women in these areas. We very much have like these academic partnerships. I think this is a big shout out to any company in the Atlanta area. What we need is for you to join the likes of Goldman Sachs, Nike, come on board with us so we can create those employment partnerships so that we can start getting those women into roles.
Yeah. That's awesome. I want to switch the conversation to be a bit more tactical about a topic that I don't think we can go a day without talking about, and that's AI, right? And, you know, Elizabeth, I'll pose this question to you first since, you know, AI is in the company's name, but it's obviously something that is top of mind for everyone today, CEOs, investors, even from a regulatory perspective. Now we're seeing AI legislation that's being passed. I think we just saw the EU AI Act that was passed recently as well. So, you know, how are you all thinking about all of this, all the conversations that happen around AI and really thoughtfully scaling it when it comes to your product and how you deliver that to your customers today?
Yeah, so we try to unpack it. So sort of like step back a little bit because I think everything is getting thrown into AI from like large language models to, you know, machine learning to automation. Everything's getting sort of thrown into that bucket. At AutoGen, we really believe that our product is around augmenting intelligence. So the AI in AutoGen is really around augmented intelligence. We use large language models to create our, you know, solution, but we're really, really thoughtful in terms of how the technology comes together and how it really implies human creativity. And so if you sort of step back and think about sort of the type of company we are, you know, 50-50 male, female, a lot of women in the leadership position, our head of product is a woman, our prompt engineers are women. So we make sure that sort of diversity and bias is sort of like a considerment or a consideration as we're building the product to make sure that, you know, this is really sort of landing in a way to really help companies be able to adopt it in a socially responsible way. So, Yeah, we're, you know, I think for us, it's part of everything we do. We really see AI unfolding very, very quickly and companies starting to adopt it in different sectors of their business. But I think the whole sort of enterprise will be redefined by technologies that are on the horizon or are about to come onto the horizon. And the degree to which you can ask the right questions around how is this product being built? Who are the people behind this product? Is a really important component of the adoption cycle.
Yeah. And that's, you know, I had a podcast episode with some other corporate VCs who are thinking about strategically implementing AI within their respective Fortune 500s or Fortune 1000 companies. And they echoed much of what you just said. So I certainly resonate with that. And Anna, I'll pose the question to you in a little bit different fashion, right? Code First Girls, from my understanding, was initially starting out as a charitable organization and then moved to be a business entity. Once you saw the impact and the momentum that what you all were doing was having on clients and customers, and curious to hear how you all, you know, after raising some rounds of capital, seed, a Series A, are thinking about a potential AI strategy or AI education strategy. Curious to hear your thoughts on that more.
Well, I think there's not a day that goes by that I get told that because of AI, Code First Girls won't exist in 3 years' time because nobody's going to need coding anymore. If you look at the number of women that are in any form of coding language that feeds into AI and ML, they represent less than 1% of the entire global population of the skills that's actually required to build these products and build these services. And for me, that is a very, very, very clear position where I will say to companies very openly, education is needed more than ever to be able to enable women to be part of that picture and to be able to actually build these products. How do we mitigate data bias? How do we make sure that we are creating products that are representative of your end users? I think when you paint what Code First Girls is doing in front of a company and ask them, do you want to create products and services that are excluding 50% of your potential client base? And invariably, the answer to that is no, because it reduces your market share. So if that is the response, it's more important than ever that we educate women to go into AI and ML. And as a society, we understand the consequences of excluding certain sections of society from building these products and services.
Mm-hmm. That's well said, Anna. And, you know, as we start to wrap up the conversation here, I'm curious to hear, you all have your sights set on Atlanta, eager to hear what your existing U.S. presence looks like today from clients, strategic initiatives, anything that you're doing in Atlanta today that you would like to shine a light on at all. Elizabeth, I'll start with you. If you all have any initiatives that you want to highlight.
Yeah. So right now we're, we have a couple employees in the U.S. and everyone is remote. So we're currently a remote first organization, potentially, you know, looking for a place to form roots, community, and sort of expand into. So from that perspective, this is a wonderful opportunity for us to really explore this market and understand what it has to offer. For us, some of the efforts that we're doing right now is, you know, hosting events in the market to really kind of network and meet people and start to form those relations even before we, you know, set roots there, so that we can start to kind of, you know, assimilate and understand, you know, what the market is like. So I would say for us, that's our first step in terms of evaluating the market, is to come in and, you know, have these networking events and start to meet people.
I love it. And Elizabeth, as I think about that, do you all have any big asks for the Atlanta startup community? We have a very robust and dynamic audience that follows this podcast and is well connected. Curious to hear the asks.
So definitely, I mean, I would love to, if anyone wants to reach out to me and kind of, I'm right now sort of like taking in as much information as possible. So if there's any sort of hot tips, please reach out to me on LinkedIn and let me know. But equally, like, if there's any sort of groups that you think would be, you know, a really good group for me to be in contact with, what we've been doing is kind of a combination of either a networking kind of event or, you know, an executive dinner type of situation where we come in and we meet with people. And there we're really talking about, you know, a little bit about Autogen, but actually more about the future of AI and what we're seeing. So more of an educational sort of dialogue with the community about, you know, what we're seeing on our side and what people are seeing on their side so that we can sort of mutually learn from each other.
I love it. I love it. Anna, I'll pose the same two questions to you.
Yeah, I mean, so we've already taught thousands of women in the US how to code. We've also partnered with a lot of companies, but I'll be really honest with you. That's mostly been in the New York area. And my big shout out to Atlanta is let's get you guys involved as well. We really, really want to work with more employers in the area. In terms of things that will be useful to us, at the moment in the US, amongst women, we are 900% oversubscribed for the Code First Girls program. We have waiting lists of women across Georgia. So when people say there's not a demand and there's not a need for this, we very, very much see the need. We just have to make sure that we have enough employers in the area that are understanding that need, are responsive to it, and also can understand the value that it's going to bring to them.
I love it. This has been a really interesting podcast, informative, and it's great to hear what you all are doing both at Code First Girls and also at Autogen AI in this world of augmenting intelligence. My last question for you both is one that's a little bit simpler, but maybe a curveball, but curious to hear as leaders of startups and in the day-to-day operations of building a company, what one to two things keep you all grounded and focused when, you know, a startup moves 100 miles an hour, right? How do you all maintain your sanity and stay grounded throughout the day?
Do you want me to go first?
Yeah, I'll let you go first.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, we're here in London or in Atlanta with London and Partners, and we're with a group of other startups. And, you know, even sort of like breaking away from the day to day, you know, there's the pressure of like the email backing up and the requests and the things that you have to do. But I will say, kind of being around other founders and sort of hearing their stories and forming community really kind of like is level setting. It's like a nice way to sort of be like, oh, you're not in this alone. Everyone is going through this. Like we all have very similar stories, which is really fun to discover. So I think kind of like making time for connections is really, really important because it's super hard in the early days to kind of get everything going. You've got like everything from operations to sales to marketing to you name it, you know, funding, all happening simultaneously. So it can feel like a lot in the early stages. And I think, you know, then secondly, it's going to be obviously family, but also friends and just like making space for yourself to, you know, decompress. And I think oftentimes, especially the younger me, I would like just keep going and going and going and going. And having that ability to stop and sort of recoup actually gave me more creativity, gave me more problem solving abilities because I was able to just shut my brain down for a second, either play tennis with a friend or something. And then I'd be like, oh my God, I've got the best idea on how to solve this. And then lastly, like I'm really into sort of like meditation and just like kind of finding a quiet space. So for me, like having those things all in happening in concert really helped me stay sort of on the top of my game and energized and sort of ready to tackle the next day.
Nice. Anna?
I think it's an acceptance that like not every day is going to look the same. Like you often deal with complete levels of uncertainty. Being able to react to that is really, really important. And the second thing I would say with that is that being a startup CEO is far from glamorous. You might have the sort of the title that you've fought for, but your success is actually sometimes about learning from failure. And that's just as important. And you might fail 100 times a day. And that's all right, because the success of that is, okay, what have you taken from that situation? How do you constantly iterate? And then with that, how do you surround yourself by people that are able to laugh about that and able to pick you up and sometimes say, yeah, you know, it's not great, But you experience extreme highs and extreme lows through the process. And it's a question of how you keep going. How do you persevere? Like, that is the most important mentality to have. Yeah. It's not going to be storming success overnight. I don't really know any company that has. If you take like the Shazam story, I was listening the other day to a podcast and the guy was saying it took 6 years, 6 years before they made any money at all, right? That is pure perseverance, pure grit to stay in there, to hang in there, and to surround yourself with people that will help you on that journey.
Well said. I think that's a great place to wrap. Anna and Elizabeth, really appreciate your time here this morning and looking forward to seeing you all more in the Atlanta ecosystem.
Thank you, William. Cool. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you both. Cheers.
Thanks for being a part of the community of courage by listening to the visionary founders and investors on the Atlanta Startup Podcast. Subscribe now so you don't miss a single episode of the over 200 investors and founders sharing their insider tips and secrets to growth. Our regular listeners tell us we're the briefing room for the innovation economy in the fastest growing region of the country, the South, and when you subscribe, you become part of the inside circle. The Atlanta Startup Podcast is proudly hosted by Valor VC. Valor is a venture capital firm that leads seed rounds in AI and B2B SaaS startups. If you like the podcast, check out more of Valor's programs for courageous founders and investors, like Startup Runway. Over $100 million in early-stage venture capital is catalyzed through Startup Runway's grant-making program for pre-seed startups. Go to startuprunway.org to learn more and apply directly for non-dilutive capital. Valor celebrates VC Day, the largest early-stage private capital conference in the region, at the end of the year. Top founders, leading VCs, endowments, and family offices attend. Learn more at vc.day. At Valor, courage is the currency of innovation and the heartbeat of our culture. Thanks for listening and join us again next week.